I'm Roby Brock. Welcome to this week's edition of Talk Business Arkansas. Governor Mike Beebe, House Speaker Davey Carter, and a look at the state's Business Hall of Fame, all on this week's docket. Let's begin with the state's chief executive. Earlier this week, I sat down with Arkansas Governor Mike Beebe for a 30-minute wide-ranging conversation as he fielded questions from you via Twitter, Facebook, and email. With the session opening Monday, an obvious place to start was with this. Does the private option save the state $89 million as advertised?
We actually already saved that money and gave it back to the taxpayers in the form of tax decreases. What happened was we were able, because of the private option, to reduce the amount of money we were spending in uncompensated care, to reduce money we were sending to UAMS, reduce money we were sending to organizations, moving some people that we were having to pay 30% on for straight Medicaid over to the private option, which we ended up having to pay 0% on. Mm-hmm. The combination of all those moves saved state general revenue in between $80 and $90 million. But the legislature said, you know, if we're going to save $80 or $90 million, let's give it back to the people. So we passed tax decreases in the last session that are graduated. But for the upcoming fiscal year, the amount of those tax decreases, the amount saved by taxpayers and cut from the budget, is between $80 and $90 million, about $86, $88, $89 million, depending on how the revenue flows. Mm-hmm. And so that money's already been spent by giving it back to the taxpayers. That money is no longer available in the budget. If you don't have the private option, then the money that you saved and the money that you otherwise have given back to the people and those folks that are now being paid for by the private option will no longer be paid that way. Theoretically, they'd go back to straight Medicaid and be paid on the basis of the 30%. And or those folks who were not being paid for uncompensated care because now they were getting paid for through the private option for the services that were being rendered will now have to be paid for those services. Where are you going to get that $89 million? That's how that works. But the private option created a reduction in what we were having to spend to the tune of between $80 and $90 million, and that money's already been spent in the form of tax relief.
It's earmarked, but the bulk of it is earmarked.
No, it's already been passed.
Some of it has. Right, but it hasn't been spent yet. It's in the fiscal 2015 budget, the tax cuts.
Yes, but when you reduce the revenue coming in based on those taxes and give it back in the form of tax relief, then that reduces the amount of money that the state would otherwise have received. And you've got to forecast that because we can't run a deficit.
Right. I'm just trying to be clear that the bulk of those tax cuts have not been, they're not in people's pockets yet, but they are earmarked
to be earmarked in people's pockets. To be in people's pockets starting July 1st.
Right.
Part of them are already in people's pockets because part of them were implemented in the last fiscal year, a small amount, about $10 million, between $8 and $10 million. That goes up to between $86 and $89 million starting July 1st. And then in fiscal 2016, they did way more than I told them they should have done. It goes to $140 to $150 million in tax relief, tax cuts that take effect a year from July. So they got an even bigger problem.
But you did sign that into law.
I signed it into law, but I said they've got an opportunity to fix that next January.
Lots of discussion about the fate of the private option funding going into this next fiscal year. Kind of give me an assessment of where you think it stands at this point in time.
You know, it's like it was last time. It's close. Anytime you have to have 75%, these other states don't have to deal with a 75% requirement.
Right.
And if we had a 51%, if we had a majority requirement, this wouldn't even be a close question. If we had a 70% requirement, it wouldn't be a close question. But when you've got to get 75% in each house, that's 75 out of 100 House members, 27 out of 35 senators, that's tough to get for just about anything, much less something that might be controversial. And so the loss of one vote here or one vote there puts a lot of stuff in jeopardy or a lot of stuff in peril. So it's just like it was last time. It took three or four or five votes to get to 77 in the House. It took a lot of negotiation to get over 27 to get to 28 in the Senate. And so you got 28 out of 35 in the Senate last time, 77 out of 100 in the House. You lose one or two in the Senate, you got an issue. You lose one or two in the House, you got an issue. So it'll be just like it was last time. It'll be a close fight.
It appears that the Senate is where the battle is going to be, at least at this point in time, when you look at kind of the lay of the land. Am I inaccurate in that observation?
I think there's a battle everywhere.
You think so?
Yeah. I mean, anytime you're dealing with those extraordinarily high numbers, because what happens is you can have a small majority of nine people that stop it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can have an overwhelming majority of people for it and a small minority that might end up with like nine that could stop the whole thing.
It seems to have some popular opinion in polling that we have done. Would you consider taking it to the people if the legislature doesn't pass it?
No, I'll be gone. You're talking about an initiated mm-hmm. act. Somebody might at some point, but I still believe in the legislative process. I still think the legislature is going to deal with logic and money and arithmetic, as I say, or as Clinton used to say. And the ideology is one thing, and you can hate Obamacare and you can hate what they're doing in Washington. What Arkansas did in a bipartisan manner, Republicans and Democrats leading together, is to take something and make something better out of it. It's the alternative to the strict Obamacare. It's something different. And it's now being copied by Republican legislatures and Republican governors across the country, the most recent being Utah.
Right. Fairly conservative state.
Fairly my foot. Governor of Utah said they want to do just what Arkansas did.
So here's a theory that's been advanced. Representative David Meeks was a guest on our Capitol View program this past weekend, and he said that he thought that the battle would be to potentially extend the funding in the fiscal session so that policy changes could be made in the regular legislative session in 2015. Do you think that that might be the bridge to get the votes that are needed, is to make some promises on policy changes? I know you won't be there.
I can't make promises I'm not going to be able to keep because I won't be there. But it's the reason they're having to do this again is one legislative year doesn't bind the next legislative year. So they're always free to make changes. They're always free to tweak or improve or do whatever they need to do to make things fit for the people of Arkansas. That option always exists and would exist whether there's an agreement or not.
So what's your strongest argument for people sitting on the fence or legislators who are opposed to re-upping the funding?
There's not one argument. There's a multiplicity of arguments. First of all, let's talk about the people. You're going to have, by the time they start voting on this, 100,000 people have got health care that never had health care before. These aren't deadbeats. These are working folks that work for people who do not carry insurance, and they don't make enough money to be able to have their own individual policies. These are people 19 to 64 years of age who traditionally are out there that just can't afford, or their employers don't provide health insurance. That's one aspect. Secondly, and a lot of people don't want to hear this, but, it's... it's been documented across the country. It's estimated about $38 million is going to be the actual cost to businesses in Arkansas that would be saved if we do the private option. They won't have to pay those penalties under Obamacare. Thirdly, the hospitals are paying for this whether we take it or not. Under what they did in Washington, Medicare reimbursements for hospitals are reduced to help pay for Medicaid expansion, or in our case, to pay for the private option. So the hospitals are going to pay for it whether we take it or not. It's $28 million a year. That's each year just to UAMS alone, and that applies to every hospital. The two big Jonesboro hospitals, they said the $8 million estimate that we talked about that they would lose without this is a conservative estimate. There will be people laid off. There will be some small hospitals that may or may not make it as a result of this. Then there's also the issue of whether or not you want to pay for another state. You know, we're going to pay this. None of this is a free lunch. Arkansans are paying for it. Arkansas hospitals are paying for it. Arkansas businesses are paying for it, whether we take it or not. And I've used the analogy over and over, Roby. I think you've heard me use it, that it's like paying that 18.5 cents a gallon federal gas tax that we pay every time we pump gas into our tank and saying we don't want our federal highway money back. Send ours to California. Send it to New York. They need help with their highways. We're in great shape. Don't give us any of our tax money back. So there's not one reason. There's a ton of reasons why you ought to do this, not the least of which is the actual people.
You can catch all of that 30-minute conversation with Governor Mike Beebe on our website at talkbusiness.net. There are some new members in the state's Business Hall of Fame. Who are they and what did they do? We'll find out shortly. Plus, still coming up, Speaker of the House Davy Carter. He'll be fighting for votes to keep funding for the private option. How's he going to get them? I'm Roby Brock. This is Talk Business and Politics, and we'll find out right after the break.
Talk Business Arkansas is sponsored by AT&T, challenging drivers to take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information at itcanwait.com. Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. Bank of the Ozarks, you have a friend here. More information at bankozarks.com. The Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, we serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. Coal, oil, natural gas, hydropower, and renewables. More at AECC.com. And the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. Our mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent anti-business legislation, regulations, and rules. Learn more at ArkansasStateChamber.com.
Friday night was a big night for four prominent Arkansans and their families. The University of Arkansas Walton College of Business inducted its newest members in the state's Business Hall of Fame. Let's roll through the lineup. Advertising executive James Faulkner, now 81 and retired. He was a pioneer in many of areas of business, building marketing campaigns for some of the state's most prestigious banks, establishing the Arkansas Grocer magazine for the retail food trade, and he started the state's first video production firm. International businessman Thomas F. Mack McLarty, this former head of ArkLaGas, became the White House chief of staff during the Clinton administration. He's the founder and chairman of McLarty & Associates, an international consulting firm, and he still has a big stake in his family's long-running and lucrative auto dealership franchises. The late Stanley Reed, who passed away in 2011. Reed was a prominent farmer and lawyer who headed the Arkansas Farm Bureau and was a former chairman of the UA Board of Trustees. He also was a longtime member of the board for Simmons First and Baptist Health. And poultry magnate Mark Simmons was the fourth inductee. He's the chairman of Simmons Foods of Siloam Springs, one of the largest private label food makers in the country. Let's pivot from business leaders to what's leading business. Arkansas's January revenue report came out this past week and offers some insight into the state of the state's economy. Let's go inside the numbers for a closer look. Total gross revenues year-to-date cleared the $3.4 billion mark as we moved 7 months through the state's fiscal year. Personal income taxes up about 0.5% from a year ago, but look for that to slow down as some tax changes that impacted last year will not have the same effect for this tax filing season. Corporate taxes up nearly 7%, and that is a great trend, but business tax collections are a relatively small component of overall state revenues. And sales and use taxes are up about 3.5% year-to-date, but they were way off forecast in January, which is a sign of some sluggish consumer spending. You got to remember that those January sales tax collections come from December spending, which would indicate that holiday shopping in Arkansas was not nearly as robust as it has been in the past. Now, perhaps those numbers suggest that shoppers are gambling on a different result. One final round of figures would suggest that the state's high rollers are rolling in the dough. Casino-style gambling at Oaklawn and Southland, known as electronic games of skill wagers, hit a high point in 2013, nearly 7 years after that form of gambling has been allowed. Take a look at this. Oaklawn and Southland saw double-digit spikes in their overall EGS wagers in 2013. Those wagers include gambling spent on video blackjack and poker, slot machines, other casino-style games. Oaklawn topped the $1 billion hurdle in electronic games of skill wagers in 2013, and Southland cleared $2 billion. So combined, electronic games of skill wagers between the two racetracks was $3.2 billion for the full year, and that is a record. I guess you could say they had a full house. Well, There was a full house on Monday as the Arkansas General Assembly convened for its now biennial fiscal sessions. Speaker of the House Davy Carter sat down for an engaging conversation, and I'm back with that right after this word from our sponsors.
Talk Business Arkansas is sponsored by AT&T, challenging drivers to take the pledge to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More information at itcanwait.com. Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. Bank of the Ozarks, you have a friend here. More information at bankozarks.com. The Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, we serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. Coal, oil, natural gas, hydropower, and renewables. More at AECC.com. And the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. Our mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent anti-business legislation, regulations, and rules. Learn more at ArkansasStateChamber.com.
He's the current Speaker of the House of Representatives, the Republican banker from Cabot, Davy Carter. I sat down with him right before the start of the state's fiscal session to see how he thinks the private option debate will play out. The session starts on Monday. We're going to talk about the private option, which is obviously going to be the largest budget battle of the fiscal session that's coming up here. Right now, it sets its odds of passing in both the House and the Senate.
The House, 100%. Senate,
confident.
90%. I think the margins are thin there, but I still think we're going to pass it.
What's the trip up? What is the hold up? I guess particularly on the Senate end, you've heard all the objections that have been raised. Why is the trepidation? What do you think it is, and how can it be addressed?
In fairness, I have not spoken to the senators who have changed their support. It seems to me that, of course, we're talking, the one senator, or Senator Irvin.
Senator Missy Irvin.
Yeah, she has an issue with the payment structure for the specialist. But, Romy, until we get to the Capitol and until we go through committee, until we have to cast votes, you take things you read and hear just as with a grain of salt, and you get up here and then you start debating those things. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know what else we can do, because everything has that we, for the large part, said or thought was going to happen, all these assumptions, they're all pretty positive. So, I mean, if the absence of anything that had developed negatively, tells me that there's more politics involved than the policy, and that's unfortunate because, in my opinion, this is pretty clear that this is what's best for the state.
And the politics are the federal health care law that people have objection to, and the big healthcare.gov rollout certainly did not help things in terms of the overall enthusiasm for healthcare reform in here. So you want to move quickly on a vote on the private option. How quickly do you want to move, and why do you want to move so quickly?
I'd like to see us vote no later than the second week. And I just think it's important because that's going to drive all of the other issues that we're dealing with. I mean, it's $90 million out of the budget if we don't keep moving forward. So we've got to regroup, start from scratch. I mean, that is a lot of uncertainty that we would throw in the mix. And we can't wait around to the end, and there's no reason to wait around to the end. And if you don't know what your position is by now on this issue, you're never going to know. So we might as well tee it up and let the chips fall where they may.
So by forcing that vote a little bit early, too, as you know, either at the tail end of the fiscal session or perhaps during the fiscal session, there'll be a filing period for political office that last few days in February, first part of March. Obviously, this plays out in Republican primary politics in a huge way. Does it put people on the record that they can't, that they're going to get primaried? They're going to get a Republican challenger. Do you think they're going to get one anyway for their previous vote, so they might as well stay with consistency?
Probably, and I think that is the least compelling reason to in this whole debate. I mean, whether
that's
or not,
how people act.
I understand, but it's just not a compelling reason. I mean, I'm tired of being on the defensive about this issue, and you know, there's such a hot button, hot potato. I mean, this has been so divisive all across the country. Nobody wants to touch it. I didn't necessarily want to touch it either. My colleagues that have like mind with me didn't necessarily want to touch it either. But you know, I'm tired of apologizing for it. I mean, if I guess back to my point about teeing it up and having some accountability, I'm not interested in waiting to vote for somebody who may or may not have a primary opponent. Mm-hmm. I mean, you either support it or you don't, and if you don't, or you vote no and run your race, or I mean that can't be the reason why.
You're proud of it because you've seen what other mm-hmm. states have done in terms of coming to Arkansas, mm-hmm. contacting you guys, emulating what the mm-hmm. state did in terms of moving that Medicaid expansion funding into this private health insurance group. Am I reading you wrong on that?
No, that's exactly right. I mean, I'm proud of for a lot of reasons. I mean, I'm proud that we had the political courage to deal with the situation. I mean, it would have been so easy to just look at what was out there, particularly in that environment we had the last session, and just say, you know what, this makes a lot of sense, but it's politically, we just don't want to go there. It's just too controversial. I mean, to overcome that in that environment and the way that was done, I mean, I'm very proud of that. And that stands independent of what you just said earlier, but that it's just makes a lot of sense on what we're doing. We can't, for the viewers, I want the viewers to know, we can't make this go away at the state level, at the state capitol. We
can't make federal health care reform.
We can't make it go away. And, you know, once you realize that as a lawmaker, I mean, there's two schools of thought that diverge from there. You can either play the politics where you can say, well, and recognize it and just go in and fix it and do what's best for what you think's best for the people of Arkansas, but not engaging because it's easy politically, mm-hmm. and it's easy to win a Republican primary. I mean, it's very, very frustrating. So that is not a compelling reason in this debate.
So there's horse trading going on, at least talks of horse trading going on, that some members who are still open-minded to voting yes or changing their vote from no to yes for the private option may feel comfortable doing that if there is a promise of some tweaks to the law in the 2015 fiscal regular session. Give me an example of something that could be tweaked based on some members' arguments.
Well, and you're right, and there's been some discussions about that, and the devil's always in the details. You know, you talk about a tweak here and a tweak there, and you've got to make sure you're thinking through all of that. But I think right now the discussions have been, you know, basically where we're spending the money, maybe some of the advertising money or some things like that. Mm-hmm. But nuts and bolts things, I mean, frankly, right now as we sit here today, it's too early to come in and make any recommendations for any significant changes because we're just now starting the process. And that kind of backs into my whole argument that it's unreasonable to pull up on this thing right now. We haven't given it a fair chance to work.
That's Davey Carter, Speaker of the House of Representatives. He'll have a busy few weeks, and we'll keep up with all of those happenings. His full interview is also on our website at talkbusiness.net. Well, that's all for this week's program. Thank you so much for tuning in. Drop me an email at roby@talkbusiness.net and share your thoughts and comments. Always appreciate you. Hope that you have a busy and a productive week. We hope to see you next time. Until then, take care.